Whether you're a nutrition enthusiast or simply an individual looking to improve your well-being, check out this comprehensive new course from the American Nutrition Association, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. It's a self-paced one-hour course with video, reference sheets, and more, all with the goal of helping you harness the power of personalized nutrition. You'll learn how to optimize your energy levels, support your mental clarity, improve your GI function, enhance your physical performance, and maintain your metabolic health. The course is regularly $49, but as an Intelligent Medicine listener, you can get access to this vital content for just $29. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman. That's the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the exclusive discount. The ANA believes personalized nutrition holds the greatest potential to solve the chronic disease epidemic. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the Harness the Power of Personalized Nutrition course. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is a forum for you to send questions to questions@drhoffman.net. Questions or comments are welcome, and we address them together on a weekly basis. And you can also call the radio program. We're now recording the radio program on Thursdays from noon to 2 p.m., and so you can call 877-726-8255 to join us on the air. So we got a lot of ways that you can get questions to us. Also, 877-726-8255, there's an option to record a question. We answer those questions on the radio program as well. So that's so that literacy is not a bar. So you can't write an email? Then fine, just call. Otherwise, questions@drhoffman.net. Okay. So, I just want to mention, one of the things that we've got going on is we've got a program called Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. It's a self-paced one-hour course with video reference sheets and more. And this is in answer to the question, how can I get a basic introduction to the field of nutrition? I'm a member and a board member of the American Nutrition Association. We are creating a special opportunity for Intelligent Medicine listeners to participate for the mere cost of $29. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman website, theANA.org/Hoffman, and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the exclusive discount. Remember, use the word the or the ANA. .org/Hoffman. And by the way, that course normally retails for $49. So you're getting a significant discount. And people are asking you all the time, Layla, where can I learn about nutrition? And no, I don't want to undertake, 3 or 4 years of, postgraduate study. like you did, Layla.
Yeah. This is a good resource. Right. This is a very, very good resource, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. The American Nutrition Association, very, yeah. Valuable.
I just recorded an entire podcast with the executive director, my good colleague, Corinne Bush, we discussed this program, we discussed the ANA, we discussed our mission to improve health literacy, because health literacy is lacking in this country. People just don't know enough about diet and food and how to make intelligent food choices. So yeah, there you have it.
Yeah.
Get off my soapbox. All right, what's the next question?
Okay, we've got a couple of questions. One from Deanna, another from Elaine. I'll start with Deanna. I cannot get off famotidine, AKA Pepcid. I would be most grateful if you would address all that I've done to avoid heartburn for the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. I've taken everything you've ever recommended, Endofin, digestive enzymes, DGL. I'm eating low carb. I'm eating 8 to 10 servings of vegetables every day. That might be your problem, Deanna, right there. That's a lot.
Yeah.
No starches. I stay away from coffee, chocolate, tomato sauces, etc.
She's doing a lot of the right things. Let me mention that, this is precisely as intended. It's a drug that you take and you can't get off.
Yeah.
So what happens when you take any kind of acid-suppressing drugs, and by the way, this is more of an old-fashioned acid-suppressing drug. Its effects are less intense than the effects of what we call PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, which are things like Protonix and that whole type of, you know, what are some of the other ones? The purple pill.
Prilosec, Nexium.
Nexium, yeah, right. Nexium. But there's a whole bunch of them now.
Protonix,
Zegarid is one. So those are much harder to get off of.
Yeah.
But to some extent, it's hard to get off of the Pepcid. Now, there may be two reasons. One is that the problem still exists. And when you don't suppress the acid, there's still some inflammation.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we really should make sure that the inflammation is properly healed. There's also the possibility that there was a hypersecretion of hydrochloric acid when you withdraw. It's kind of a boomerang effect where you actually get a hypersecretion of hydrochloric acid.
Yeah. Deanna does confess. She says, my only sin is wine several times a week.
No.
Deanna, it's not going to happen with you.
Gotta go.
You got to stop.
Gotta go. Gotta go.
Gotta go.
That's just alcohol just strips the lining from your gastrointestinal tract.
That's why alcohol can cause ulcer.
Yeah. Bingo. Bingo. Okay. So the good news, I mean, I was kind of baffled by this case at first. It was like, ooh, this is going to be really challenging. Oh, well, you know, as I said, maybe she's eating too many vegetables. She's getting like fiber overload. I don't know. That's a little bit, you know, overreach. But boy, she just, when she confessed to the alcohol intake, and look, I'm not making a moral judgment about it.
Not at all.
But just from a pragmatic standpoint.
Doesn't help your bird.
Yeah. Yeah. Pragmatic standpoint. It's just murder on the gastrointestinal tract. So, I mean, look, if you want to drink a couple glasses of wine a week and, you know, you tolerate it, fine. Mm-hmm. Knock yourself out. You feel. Although most studies these days show there are absolutely no health benefits to alcohol. There used to be thought, you know, heart healthy, that stuff, you know, resveratrol. No. There are no benefits to alcohol. And there are a lot of downsides.
It's a mitochondrial poison.
Yeah.
Besides being neurotoxic, it's a mitochondrial poison. Actually, Elaine has another question related to this.
Coincidentally, another person has a
question around it. Yeah. Elaine writes, if I have Barrett's esophagus and I take Pepcid, should I still take hydrochloric acid? Well, here's the thing. Some people are low in hydrochloric acid, and that's why they have acid reflux in the first place. They don't have enough acid to digest the food, hence the indigestion.
So let me comment on this thing, because Barrett's esophagus is a source of great fear and trepidation for people when they're diagnosed with it. It's diagnosed on the basis of endoscopy, and what it shows is what's called metaplasia, which is the first step towards cancer. Okay. Said the big C word there. That's super scary. Oh my goodness. So when you have normal cells, it goes through staging where you get metaplasia, and then you get dysplasia, and then you get carcinoma in situ, which means it's just at the surface layer, and then you get invasive cancer, and you have esophageal cancer, and your chances of 5-year survival are fairly low, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So it is a dread prospect. Now, I routinely, when people are diagnosed with Barrett's esophagus, I ask them this question. I say, what do you think is the percentage of people who get esophageal cancer, which is virtually your death knell, when you have Barrett's esophagus? And usually they will say something like anywhere from 10, 20%. Sometimes a more astute person will say, I don't know, 2%, 5%. What it actually is, it's 0.2%.
Okay.
So your chances are, let's say, 1 in 500 of getting cancer. Now, the treatment for that is to completely suppress your acid. So I'm kind of surprised that you're taking Pepcid for that, because Pepcid is famotidine, which is an old-fashioned medication that's not as effective at suppressing stomach acid. Mm-hmm. And it's actually more benign for that reason. Actually think that if you're consigned to a lifetime on Pepcid, it's better than being consigned to a lifetime on Nexium or Protonix.
Yeah, that's true.
But so this is a conundrum for me, is I've looked at the studies And I think what they've done is they've said, oh, you've got something that can cause cancer, and it's a bad cancer, and you can die from it. So we're going to stop your stomach acid. Once they concluded that, they have decided that it is unethical to perform trials where they compare people who are unmedicated with Barrett's esophagus versus people who are medicated. They feel it's equivalent, it would be equivalent to the Tuskegee syphilis
Airmen.
Study.
Yes. You know,
where they had African-American men who had syphilis, and one group got penicillin.
Men and the others didn't.
And the others didn't. And they let men progress towards neurosyphilis, like advanced tertiary syphilis, without giving them the proper intervention. So what I'm saying, I mean, it's like a dramatic comparison, but I'm saying, I think that it's now, in this current environment, it's impossible to do rational studies, because I actually think that there is some, there's some rationale for completely suppressing stomach acid to reduce the recurrent progression of, remember, it's a progression. So you would see, like, there's more Barrett's, or now there's, like, you know, more mutations, or the worst pathology on a second look. And typically people get followed up with endoscopies. Lulu, have we not seen patients with Barrett's esophagus, and that it virtually disappears when we do the right thing?
Yes. And we're not talking one or two cases. I know in the course of my career, I've seen many cases of Barrett simply go away.
They can't find it anymore.
They can't find it anymore.
It's partially a matter of diet. It's partially a matter of supplements. We like to use DGL and Endofen. We also like to use, you know, there's some evidence that things like EGCG from green tea have cancer preventive effects. Higher dose folate. Another one that I like is the broccoli extract, sulforaphane, diadylmethane, DIM. You know, because these cruciferous vegetables have really strong anti-cancer effects. So I put, you know, and mutually we put people on these types of programs, it regresses. You know, cancer, this is first of all, it's not cancer, it's pre-cancer. It can regress. It can...
Regress and go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the good news.
Yeah.
With,
So,
Deanna, you've got to stop the wine. And you also mentioned 8 to 10 servings of vegetables every day is a lot. That may be the source of your problem. And you also said you're eating only bananas, melons. Okay, bananas on the GERD list of foods to avoid.
Okay.
You need a consult, Deanna.
Why is there
But it's there.
Oh, okay.
It's there where, it's on the list of foods to avoid. Now, the list of foods to avoid for GERD is very long, and not every food applies to everybody.
Yeah, right.
But
you have to do a little trial and error. What works for you?
People trial and error and do all of that. So, you know, Deanna needs a workup. And Elaine, you may need a workup too, but thank you both very much for these questions on GERD and Pepcid and all that, because there are more and more people we're seeing taking those medications. And really, if they just make some changes in their diet, which aren't very many, it can make all the difference in the world.
Do you know what Pepcid is incidentally good for? Pepcid actually has a bit of an anti-allergy effect. It's a histamine blocker.
It's good for MCAS, is it?
Yeah.
Or mast cell activation?
Yes, mast cell activation syndrome.
That's really so. So would you have somebody try Pepcid, somebody with, you know, intractable allergic reaction, despite taking something like a DHIS with the quercetin, the bromelain, the nettles and all that, you know? Wow. Okay. Yeah. That could be a good try.
Along with your conventional antihistamines, you know, maybe also a gastric antihistamine. They could work synergistically. But, you know, that's kind of
interesting.
Like, that's just kind of, you know, esoteric knowledge, clinical problem for some of our clinicians who are listening. Okay, great.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, we've got a question here from Marianne. Dear Dr. Hoffman, thank you for your Callow Curb podcast. I trust your opinion and placed an order.
So let's just admit for what Callow Curb is. Callow Curb is it's actually, I've long resisted promoting weight loss products, natural weight loss products, because A, I don't think they work. B, they either give you a bad case of indigestion or they give you a bad case of the jitters, like raise your blood pressure, make you anxious, give you insomnia, so we don't want speed, natural speed or, synthetic, methamphetamine. But this one works differently, and it works in the gut in a way that harnesses some of the physiology that these new semaglutide medications, GLP-1 agonists work.
Your Ozempic, your Wegovy, Mounjaro, I think is another.
It's not going to make you lose 25 pounds over, 2 months, but it is going to help with cravings and appetite. It does demonstrably. The studies are pretty conclusive that it curbs appetite. So hence it's called Caligur.
Yeah.
So did she try it?
So Marianne's asking, can Caligur be taken even if it's not before a meal? For example, can it be taken at night to avoid snacking?
Yeah.
If so, how long after eating dinner does it take to have an empty stomach again? Marianne, 2 hours after a meal, your stomach then is fairly empty. But she's asking, does having a beverage count as not an empty stomach? If it's a clear beverage, it's okay.
I asked that question when I interviewed the one of the lead researchers on Caligur. And typically it's taken before a meal so that you eat less. It's not going to make it so you won't eat. It's not going to make you nauseous, but it will just make you eat maybe 15% less at the meal and have less in the way of sweets. But I asked, can you use it? Some people get like late night munchies, and he said, yes, it can be used. Some people literally cannot. And I find it hard to believe, because once I'm in bed and asleep, the last thing I'm thinking about is food. But for some people, they're on this kind of treadmill of eating. And after a few hours after eating, they want to eat some more, and they'll wake up, they'll raid the refrigerator. So it could be used, at or near bedtime. That's permissible. It hasn't been intensively studied for that, but it's plausible that it might work.
Yeah. Yeah. I would, Marianne, I would say go ahead and take it. Take it, 2 hours, 2.5 hours after your dinner, so that you're not, people have to realize if they're waking up in the middle of the night hungry, they're experiencing some low blood sugar during the night.
Yeah.
You want to ask why.
Yeah.
Did you have a bowl of pasta for dinner? That would be why.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you needed to eat a steak, a nice piece of fish with some broccoli or something like that, or a nice salad with that protein or something, as opposed to so much starch or too many carbohydrates. That could be caused, or having dessert. Having a dessert after dinner, or any kind of dessert at all, or eating
apropos, we last night, because we've got the whole family at the beach house this week, and we had, they introduced me to a quinoa pasta that is really light and delicious, and we made a basil pesto for that, but I wanted an insurance policy for precisely what you're discussing, so I figured if I ate just I could inhale that stuff, but it's mostly carbs.
Yeah.
And so I said, as an insurance policy, I said, I'm going to grill some salmon. So at least there's some protein to
balance. You lowered
balance.
The glycemic load of the quinoa pasta. Very
right,
good.
To balance the carbohydrate. Although quinoa is, I think, among grains, it's fairly high in protein, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
True.
But it's still starchy. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gluten-free, but still, sounds delicious.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Marianne, go ahead and try it on an empty stomach. Let us know how it goes. Okay. All right. Let's see here. We've got an email from Julia. Hello, Dr. Hoffman. The beginning of June, I was on my e-bike on a concrete trail. I was unable to keep my footing and the bike tipped and it slammed me onto the concrete. Needless to say, I suffered a hip fracture, and now I've had a total hip replacement.
Been there, done that. Although I wasn't on an e-bike, I was just on a regular bike, and it happened on the streets of New York. It I did not. I had what's called a high femoral fracture, and my immediate concern was that I would need a hip replacement, but I did not. They simply put a rod in there, and that was 2006. And I got to tell you that, you know, it's almost like it didn't happen. I mean, I have like a little bit of a Frankenstein scar on my hip, but that's the extent of it. And the titanium piece got pulled out a few months later. So, okay.
That titanium piece is really common, framed and hanging on the wall.
But yeah, exactly. I have a memento.
In your office. Yes. Yeah. So Julia says, I have in the past been diagnosed with osteoporosis. So on my departure from the hospital, the surgeon instructed me to take oyster shell calcium 500 milligrams twice a day, which I have not done.
Hold on. Okay. In order to be an orthopedic surgeon, it takes what, you know, like after medical school, it takes like a, you know, 6-year residency and fellowship. And it's very, very precise and very, it is a very exacting process. And I have great admiration for orthopedists. In fact, I just read that the Dalai Lama at the age of 88 went to the hospital where I was treated, one of the finest orthopedic hospitals in the world. Obviously, the Dalai Lama schlepped all the way over here to get his knee replacement at 88, and he's doing fine. But I got to say that there's such a disparity between the expertise that they show in this very, very exacting and precise surgery and his woeful lack of nutritional knowledge.
Yeah.
Because, like, you got osteoporosis and you just take some oyster shell calcium? Come on.
No.
Get out of the dark ages, please.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Julia says, I currently take vitamin D3 and my level's about 83.
Which is fine.
Yeah. And I also take several well-vetted supplements from FullScript everything.
Well,
and anyway.
Here's the problem. I got to say, he needs an evaluation because, you know, whenever you have a fracture, it's important to ascertain whether the fracture was related to osteoporosis or whether it was simply a high impact injury. And when I had my fracture, they said, oh, how old was I? I was in my 50s. They said, oh, you must get screened for osteoporosis. And I said, well, I'm an athlete. I think I'm relatively fit. Was get checked out because unbeknownst to you, you might've been fragile. Well, I said, I hit the pavement pretty hard, you know, and said, well, fine. So I got screened. Bottom line, I didn't have osteoporosis. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I did not have an osteoporotic fracture. I had a traumatic fracture.
Yeah.
We don't know in this case, whether this woman's documented osteoporosis was the reason that she had a fracture, but it's really like a wake-up call. Like, you better do something about your bones because the next time, you know, you might not be going on an e-bike at a high speed and hit the concrete. You might be just going up the stairs and trip and you'll end up with, you know, the other hip fracture.
Yeah. Well, here might be a clue. Julia is 68. She's 5'2 at 112 pounds. No meds except for a 325 milligram aspirin.
Okay.
She's active. She's strength trained. She walks. She just wants to be able to gain her strength. She's doing physical therapy twice a week.
Well, I got to say, without seeing her scores, I can't tell her that she can just take supplements because there's a time and a place for medication.
Yeah.
And, you know, she might be a candidate for her medication along with supportive supplements. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, you know, a fairly high percentage of the patients that we see are people, especially women, who want a second opinion on a diagnosis of osteoporosis. Do I really, really need to take the medication? And it's about 50-50. Sometimes I say it's overkill. You don't really need to take a medication. It's like they're overzealous. I mean, we can fix this with a natural approach. And, you know, weight-bearing exercise, of course, all that stuff. Sometimes a vibration plate, you know, these things are helpful. Adequate protein is important in the diet. Don't be a skimpy vegan.
Exactly.
Not good.
Exactly.
But there is a place where, you know, you pass the point of no return. And I do remember a sad case where I practically begged a woman to take medication and she just wanted to do it the natural way. She was a woman in her late 70s and she then experienced a very painful vertebral fracture that, you know, possibly could have been averted had she taken medication in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
And so that's when the spine collapses on itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think I remember that case. I think I remember her spine number was like a negative 4.2 or something.
Yeah, it was really, low that I said, I implore you, you really should take medication.
Yeah.
And then I wonder about the fate of, I did see a patient a few months ago, and she said, she says, I'm a chiropractor. I don't believe in medication. Now, that's not representative of most chiropractors. Most chiropractors are pragmatic. But just because of her belief system, she had very bad osteoporosis, and she wasn't going to take any medication. So she just wanted to use the natural stuff. And I said, it's going to slow the progression, but it's not going to reverse it as much as the medication might. So I just don't know how to weigh in on this situation.
Mm.
But it's a useful discussion point because
it is.
If you like fall and break your wrist or you fall and break your hip, it's time to get an assessment. Do you have osteoporosis?
Absolutely. Yeah. Julia, we hope you feel better soon. Thank you for your question. All right.
I think we have time for another question.
Great. We've got one from Louise. Hi, Layla and Dr. Hoffman. I heard that there are new guidelines being used for when statins should be prescribed. Can you please talk on that and compare to the old guidelines? Much appreciated, and loved your recent podcast with Jane Jansen. She's a great guest.
Oh, yeah. Good. So there is, this is a source of great confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a new study called the PREVENT trial that looked at the likelihood of developing a MACE, a major adverse cardiovascular event. The acronym is a MACE, based on certain criteria, i.e., cholesterol, HDL, triglycerides, and age and sex, and sometimes they factor in race, although these days it's not fashionable to do so, but they should because there are racial differences in susceptibility to disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go to a plug-in and it'll tell you whether you should be concerned about a heightened 10-year risk of a MACE, all right? And the cutoff point for statins should be you have a 10% or greater risk of a MACE in the next 10 years. And that should be, that's the criterion for going on a statin. Well, the previous criteria set a pretty low bar for putting people on statins so that maybe, 60 or 80 million Americans should be on a statin. But then they did this new study, and this new study, if we really pay attention to the study, would mean that 20 million less Americans need to be on a statin. Now, I looked at the PREVENT guidelines, and I think they're missing some pieces. I think that you can't just use a plug-in, which is, do you have a family history? What's your cholesterol? What's your LDL? Put in some numbers and then it spits out an answer. I think it's a clinical decision that should be made by a doctor. But in particular, we should be using imaging. And I think the problem with these assessments is that they don't look at the arteries. And I think we should be using, at the very least, coronary artery calcium screening, but also now the potential for using CT angiograms for soft tissue screening, because that really tells you, look, I'm kind of an anomaly. I mean, I just looked at my cholesterol. My cholesterol is 232. My LDL is very good. I'm sorry, my HDL is very good. It's 93, mm-hmm. but officially I've got a high LDL. It's 132. That would be like, you put that into a plug-in and it's going to say, oh my goodness, your LDL is too high. And oh, you're a 71-year-old male. You're going to crap out.
No, you're actually going to live longer than most people because of your bus trip.
What informs that is that a few years back, I did a coronary artery calcium scanning test, which said that I had zero plaque. So while admittedly, the test is somewhat flawed because you might have some soft plaque, but really only 3% of the people who end up with MACEs have a zero score. It's very unlikely to have a zero score and develop a major adverse cardiovascular event. So, you know, I think we need to look at the totality of, I think they also, if in many of these questionnaires, they don't ask, you know, how many, are you very active? I mean, this over this 4th of July holiday, I've cycled like 150 miles.
Wow.
I've been swimming like crazy. I've been, you know, running. So they don't ask that. You know, doesn't that mitigate one's risk to be at a high activity level? You know, not necessarily. I mean, look at Jim Fix. I mean, he was a fabulous runner, but, you know, he died young of a heart disease. So, but these are all factors that, it does not take into account Lp little a. It doesn't take into account C-reactive protein, homocysteine, you know, some of these risk factors are important. It doesn't characterize the LDL. The LDL, that, you know, what's the particle size? What's your apolipoprotein B?
Yeah.
So I mean, to me, it's amusing that like, one study says that 80 million Americans should be on statins. And then, this new study says that only 60 million Americans should be on statins. I think that illustrates the weakness of using these kind of arbitrary criteria, not arbitrary, but not precision medicine criteria for determining who should be taking so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there we go. So Louise, thank you for that very thoughtful question. I want to remind our listeners that you can shop hundreds of curated vetted supplements in Dr. Hoffman's full script dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. We stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The very same supplements that Dr. Hoffman takes, that I take, that we prescribe to patients, and buying through FullScript offers fast free shipping and optional refill reminders via text or email. It's safe, it's secure, and it includes world-class customer service. So take advantage of that.
Right. And you can be sure that, you know, your purveyor did not obtain the supplements while dumpster diving.
Oh, my goodness.
Or something like that.
Hello, Amazon. Yeah.
And there are counterfeits galore out there. You know,
And
this is actually manufacturers that I talk to, because I talk to people in the industry, people who run these companies. And they said, oh, my God, you know, we looked at some of these websites and we said, why are they selling our stuff so cheaply? How could they do it? I mean, we sell the stuff for like $29.99 and they're selling it for like $10.99. How do they do it? And then it's, well, let's order some. They ordered it, they sent it to their lab, and they found that it was like basically starch, you know, with some coloring. But with a label that looked absolutely identical, you know, like perfect counterfeit.
Wow. Counterfeit, exactly. Oh my goodness. So it does make a difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, great stuff. This all the time we have. Let's remind our listeners, questions to drhoffman.net.
Yes.
Place to go. And we invite you to send your questions. We'll be back next week with another edition of Q&A with Layla. Thanks, Layla.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you, everybody.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover intelligent medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations. You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's drhoffmanstore.com. drhoffmanstore.com.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.